hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 129 of the No Better Than Average podcast. This is Jeff Chaney, long time no talk, been out for a couple of episodes for various reasons. Nice to be back. And with me, as always, is a Jacob. Jacob, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing reasonably okay. We've had gorgeous weather here in the Midwest the last couple of days, so I can't complain about the gorgeous weather. It's been, it's been the high 70s, low 80s, and sunny and low humidity, and we just don't get those many days in central Indiana in July, so I'm not complaining at all about that.
Good deal. And also with us today, Todd Singer. Todd, how are you?
Hey, good. I enjoyed the day by grilling a bunch. Some steaks and some chorizo links and bratwurst. It was very tasty.
I grilled T-bone steaks today. I restained a part of the deck that I had done an add-on last year and didn't want to stain it right away. They tell you to kind of wait, you know, so got that done this morning. So yeah, it was very, very good day. Let's get the stuff out of the way. If you want to call in and leave any kind of comments, you're welcome to do so by calling 317-643-1212. As always, you can subscribe to our newsletter, nobettershow.com/join. So, hey, it's been a long time, guys.
Yeah.
feels like I'm a stranger.
I know. That's, you go to that bi-monthly format, and then you miss a show or two, and like all of a sudden, it seems like it's been weeks and weeks and months.
Yeah. Had some not very good situations that caused me to miss some stuff, but glad to be back. Missed talking to you guys.
I know. It feels like it's been forever. We had a listener write in. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to catch the last show, Jeff, but one of the things that we were talking about was the Amazon purchase of Whole Foods and what that meant. And Todd and I had both talked about the fact that we were not big users of, people going and picking your groceries out for you. And I questioned if people really did that or not. And Melissa wrote a comment on our website and said, regarding online grocery ordering with curbside pickup, I, my sister, and my mother have each used the service several times, either from Walmart or HEB. We've all had nothing but positive experiences and found that our grocery bill is less because we stick to our lists. I, too, have a hard time giving up control when it comes to selecting my produce and meat. You can leave a note regarding how you would like your items. For example, please select green bananas. We have found that the shoppers seem to take pride in their selections, and we have never received what seems to be inferior produce or meat. The only issue I have with the service is the amount of plastic waste that is created when filling my order. For this reason, I mostly continue to go into the store to shop so that I can reuse my reusable bags. Other than that, I love the service. It is a great time saver. And I was actually talking with my wife's family not too long after, and my sister-in-law also chimed in with, oh my gosh, we love the shopping service, and we use it all the time, and it's the greatest thing ever. So I guess color me corrected. People use it and love it. How about you? Does the Chaney household use any of the shop for me services?
No, actually, we never have. And it's kind of interesting because I have a niece that works for Walmart, and she sent us a link early on when Walmart started doing the curbside stuff where we could save like $10 if we used it, and we still didn't use it. So I don't know. I mean, it just seems like sometimes we just go and kind of like, oh, what looks good, or, you know, what strikes our fancy.
Right. Impulse purchases. I'm the worst.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. Sometimes when you're, you know, like when we went to the grocery today and, oh, they had T-bone steaks on sale and they looked good.
Right.
So that's what we had it for dinner. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess impulse buy is not great, but it works sometimes. And like we tend to, more and more, we used to go to the grocery and stock up and have a bunch of stuff in the fridge and all that. And we tend to not do that now as much. And we kind of just go and buy a meal for the day.
Yeah.
Which is different than what we used to do, but we found that if you have food laying around, sometimes it just goes bad and, you know, and feels wasteful. So we just kind of just go buy what we need and
yeah,
you know, a few staples, but
we do that too. In fact, we just had to pitch a container of chicken that it didn't get used before its Best Buy date. And the last I checked, chicken's not supposed to be green. So we did not grill it up. So yeah, I hear you. I mean, unfortunately, that just means that I get to do what I dislike more, which is going to the grocery. So I don't know. I can see both sides. Like, we have a food saver and we are usually pretty good at using it, but then sometimes we fall out of that routine where we're not, you know, vacuum packing our purchases and all of that fun stuff. So
Right.
I don't know.
Even with the amount of waste, though, it's still going to be cheaper at the grocery. So you can kind of console yourself with that as opposed to eating out.
Oh, that's true. Absolutely. But then what usually happens is we, you know, go, oh, well, this chicken's no good. Let's go out for dinner. Which is way, way easier than it should be. You know,
with us too.
Something that happened that I want to throw an antidote in here because it was one of the more well received things that I talked about on the podcast back in December, where I had to climb the drone eating tree, and so apparently the audience really resonated with the whole Jacob puts himself in peril, theme.
They want you to do it more.
They were enthusiastic on that. And I had to share a story, from last week, actually, of putting myself in peril. And, I'm sort of starting to side with you, Jeff, on the fact that nature can, go soak its head. We have these really old gutters. We actually need new gutters for our house. And the gutters have, these gutter shields over the top of them to try and keep gunk out of the gutters, and they are old and gunk has gotten into the gutters and the gutters are runneth over and all that fun stuff. So my wife said, hey, can you go out and, clean out the corners and get the gunk out of the gutters and all of that fun stuff. So sure, I'll be happy to do that. So I was out cleaning out the gutters and pulling off these sections of gutter cover that were installed. They're about 4 feet long and they're maybe 10 inches wide, and they're just sheet aluminum that's got a little bend on the front edge, so it's not razor sharp, so you know you don't cut yourself and bleed all over the place. And so I was taking them down, and everything was going fairly uneventfully, and there was plenty of gunk in the gutters to get out, even with these gutter shields on, because apparently over decades, even with gutter shields, stuff still accumulates. And I was on the ladder in front of the driveway. And I pulled out a section, and underneath the gutter shield was and here's where my finesse of entomology, if you will, breaks down. They were either hornets or yellow jackets or some cross hybrid of gigantic stinging monster devil thing. And there was a nest underneath the shield in the gutter. And I pulled it out and I went, oh, that's a nest. And all of these buzzy little angry things looked at me and went, oh, that's a nest. That's a guy. And
should kill him.
That's exactly what happened. About a dozen. And they were comically large. I mean, they were probably the size of a Mini Cooper, I'm guessing, roughly. And about a dozen of these things flew out, and they were wearing war paint. They were a color of yellow with black stripes that does not exist in nature. I am convinced that they have, somehow gone and gotten paint and painted their abdomen. And they started dive bombing my head. And one of them got up inside my ear. I could hear him buzzing. And I have not been stung by a critter in a good long while. Like,
Jacob, have you ever seen The Wrath of Khan? Sorry.
Yeah. And I know my father has allergies to bee stings. And I don't want to get stung. I'm a peaceful, loving guy. I don't want these things to get me. So this one was up inside my ear, and I hear it buzzing, and I know I'm just mere nanoseconds from being stung repeatedly. And I've got other ones dive-bombing my head and just being generally angry and all ticked off. And so my primitive little lizard brain kicks in, and it goes, you know what you should do? You should just jump. That's the best possible recourse. So I'm standing, 7 feet up a ladder, and I just jump off into nothing, into the abyss, and fell off a ladder again. That's twice in six, 7 months.
All the shit, and you have your broken leg. That's great.
The good news is apparently in sensing my leap of death, the critters went, well, that poor SOB is an idiot. We won't sting him. So the good news is I only fell off the ladder. I did not get stung. But the bad news is, yeah, I fell off a ladder again. So I am 2 for 2 on ladders, at least in the last 6 months. So I'm thinking, I'm sensing a pattern here. I should not be allowed anywhere near a ladder.
So was it a yellow jacket? Is that what it was?
I Googled and I was unable to find conclusive evidence because from what I was reading online, I think yellow jackets live in the ground, but hornets make nests. But hornets don't look like what I saw. I swear they were hybrid death drones.
There are also wasps that are yellow.
They could have been wasps. They were Satan's minions, something like that. It was awful. It was awful. The good news is I didn't break anything. The bad news is I pulled the crap out of my calf muscle. And so I've been hobbling around like a gimp the last 7 to 10 days. And it's not been a whole lot of fun. So
did you get stung in the ear?
I did not. I think my leap to death was enough to convince it that I was insane and it didn't need to waste its stinger on me. And it did fly out of my ear, but I had quite enough of that. I went into the garage and I looked for, gasoline or napalm or bug spray, and we had none of the above easily at hand. So I put everything away and I went inside and took ibuprofen and put ice on my leg. Apparently me, I am the X factor. Like, I am just a really huge clumsy oaf, and that is apparently becoming obvious. It's been obvious apparently to everybody but me, and now it's apparent to me.
Lowe's has that great wasp spray that you can like hold from, 6 or 8 feet away and just coat them.
Yeah.
That's a great sound for the podcast when I make that noise. But
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we went.
That's worked well for me in the past.
Yeah, we went to Sam's Club and I bought like a 30-pack of wasps, and it says on the label like works from 30 feet away. Now I have not gone back to test this out yet. I'm staying away from ladders and high places.
You have to set up a tripod and calculate the trajectory and the angle and the wind velocity. Then you can hit the nest.
Something. I'm literally a little bit paranoid about getting back on a ladder. I don't think I should do it. Yeah. So I thought I'd throw that one out there since the audience had such a laugh at my predicament back in December. So apparently every 6 months I'm due for nearly hurting myself quite badly.
Now, speaking of hurting yourself quite badly, you were talking pre-show that you've moved into your open office environment finally.
Oh, yes. And I know that your office is looking at similar, Todd. And to this, I have to say to that, dear God, run away. So last week was our inaugural move, phase one move into our open office concept. And we're already having frictions with upper management and us lowly peons. We got these systems whereby everybody gets exactly 6 foot by 6 foot of space. So everybody gets 36 square feet to call their own, so long as you don't do anything to alter anything. So we all went down there and we looked at our space, and the way it's set up is it's kind of an L shape. And the L that sticks out away from the wall is a desk that will raise and lower, which is kind of nice. So you can stand up if you want to stand up. You can sit down if you want to sit down. Kudos to that. But the way everybody's sitting, you're facing the back of somebody's head, and they're facing the back of somebody's head. So we're all in a line looking right at each other down the line. And then over to the right is another line of people. And it almost is like a Viking ship where I feel like we should have oars and paddles, because that's kind of the setup. So we discovered that these desks move, and we rotated all of our desks 90 degrees. So we had almost like a desk credenza thing going on with our chair between them. Now we're all looking out into the common area and we have a little bit of privacy. And we all got set up and everybody looked at that and went, hey, that's a great idea. And everybody started doing this. And so that was right before the holiday break, the 4th of July. And we get back from the holiday break, and our big boss walks in and looks about and goes, "This will not stand. Everybody must put things back because of reasons. Reasons I can't explain, but you must put them back." So that was the first.
Must conform.
Must conform. That was the first thing that was a bit of a fun thing, is being treated like a child. But really the worst part, and this is something I didn't expect to be this bad, is the noise. So the area I'm sitting in is about 50 feet wide. So we've got 6 feet between us, and we've got six people in a row, plus an aisle at the front and the back, roughly 50 feet wide. And I'm not sure how long it is, but it's a big rectangle. And I counted up, and I think that there are 54 workstations in this little area. And that includes the managers, who get slightly bigger workstations, but everybody's in the open. And there is no wall higher than chest height on me. I'm 6 foot tall. I'm going to say it's about 5 foot tall, like boundary walls. So wide open, 12-foot ceilings. They've got white noise generators in, generating white noise. They've got 54 people, and they don't even have everybody moved in yet. They probably got 35 people moved in. And I came home Friday, and I realized I'm just exhausted because it is loud. Just the conversations, people talking. You put headphones in to get away from it, and you've got music in your ear the whole time. It's like you just kind of feel on edge. And I didn't even notice that I was just kind of jittery and on edge until I had left and it was quiet. And I got to tell you, I'm really dreading going back. I know it is such a puny thing to complain about. Oh, I get to work in an air-conditioned office job. Woe is me. But it really sucks. And golly, I mean, the upper management, who thinks these open office concepts are a good idea, they all need to go just jump off of a tall building, because it is absolutely awful. And, you know, I got to say this, like, I work with professionals, you know, people who are in a career. We're not, you know, just cogs in a machine. And I got to say, within the team that I'm on, it would shock me. Now, I don't know, because not everybody has said, but it would literally shock me if not every single person has resumes out right now. They are going to lose their talent, is what's going to happen. And
how high is the level of the white noise?
It's loud enough that you can hear just a constant staticky sound. Now, we've been told that it is on low, and that as people fill in and the seating is filled up, that they will adjust the levels as appropriate to sufficiently drown out conversations. But we've already had rounds of emails coming out saying things like, and we were sold a bill of goods that this open office is going to improve collaboration. That's the big buzzword, collaboration, collaboration, mm-hmm. collaboration. We all need to be open so that we can collaborate. And there was an email that actually went out last week, and I kid you not, it specifically said, if you need to have a conversation or collaborate, you need to go to a focus room. So we're not even supposed to do the thing that they were trying to tell us the space will do, which is collaborate, because now they went, oh, it's really loud, and we just can't have all these people having all these conversations out in the open. And so now we're being told for any conversation to go to the break room and do work there, which, no, that's a break room. I'm sorry, you shouldn't go there and do work. Or go to a focus room, of which there are eight for a floor of 375 people. So, yeah. Good luck with that. It's not going to end well. I feel like there might be, you know, a rampant shooter type situation. It's really tense. It's really bad.
Yeah,
I'm only exaggerating a little bit.
That's unfortunate. Well,
I know my previous employer, when they first put on the white noise, it was too loud. And eventually we convinced them that it was too loud. And then they turned it down, and it was much better.
Did they keep saying, huh, when you told them it was too loud? What? We can't hear you.
So we'll see how. I don't think there's any white noise in the space that I'm moving to this week. So we'll find out soon.
Well, I will keep you in my thoughts, because it's not been an easy transition for us. to put it mildly.
I was saying before the show, I'm in a corner, so I think I'm going to be okay, but we'll see. I've been wrong before.
I don't know. That could just focus all of the noise. Like, you might be in like a natural focus of the floor, and it's amped up in the corner.
It's like somebody talks on the other diagonal corner, and then I hear it.
It's like one of those whisper things. Yeah, yeah. It's a big parabolic dome. Well, could be. Yeah, I mean, listeners, if you're out there living in open office land, if you've got any tips, tricks, ideas for surviving open office-dom, which has just not been kind to me so far, we would love to hear them, because now it sounds like Todd is going to be in the same situation, and gosh, I need something better than just jam earphones in your ears, because... Yeah, there's only so many podcasts and so many, you know, classic rock hits I can listen to. I need my quiet, and I'm having a real hard time finding it. So we shall see.
So, hey, I got a story that I wanted to throw out there just because I thought it was kind of interesting.
Sure.
I didn't put the show notes, of course. But did you guys see that a Canadian sniper set a new world record?
Yes. We were talking about this at work. 2 miles.
2.2 miles. Yeah. 11,316 feet.
That is amazing. I don't even know what mechanics go into taking a shot like that.
Using a Macmillan TAC 50, which is a 50 caliber weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, the round leaves the barrel of the gun faster than the speed of sound.
Right.
Everything that I read, I've read two or three articles on this, that the sniper himself even said that it's more about the spotter.
Oh, sure.
Because the spotter is the one who calculates the curvature of the Earth, the Earth's rotation, distance, wind, atmospheric conditions. So, I thought that was pretty amazing. It not only beat the record, it shattered the record.
Oh, yeah.
The record before was a little over 3,000. I want to say just 3,200 feet, maybe.
Yeah, he's like just shy of a mile, right? And this was 2 miles.
This was 11,000 feet. I just, wow.
We talked about it.
So when he did it, he apologized immediately.
Because he's Canadian.
We talked about it at work, and I looked it up, and on that gun, it was saying that gun. And I don't remember all the specifics now, but it listed the accuracy of that round and that gun in like minutes of arc. And I did some Google calculating, and that gun is capable of shooting groupings at 2 miles that are 18 inches. So you can reliably put bullets into an 18-inch circle at 11,000 feet with that gun and that bullet. That's incredible.
Now, technology keeps advancing. That's pretty amazing. They said that, it wasn't the ideal situation. They would have much rather done a drone, but there were women and children around, and they needed to be absolutely sure of the shot. And I don't know. It was very interesting. I just thought that was kind of cool. I mean, you know, not that someone got shot, but that I'm sure the person who did get shot deserved it, or, you know, I'd at least like to think so that I can sleep at night.
That's right. We're going to assume it was a bad guy, a very bad guy.
Very, very bad guy.
The worst guy. So you said a drone, but are drones capable of surgical strikes like that, or do they just drop a small bomb?
They just drop a small bomb, which is why they didn't use a drone, because there were women and children in the area.
So I would think this would be more accurate, because you know you're only taking out one person.
Yeah. They said, ideally that they don't want to count on someone making 11,000 foot shot, I think, is what they were implying.
Oh, I got you. They should have got him closer.
Reliable to use a drone, but...
I got you. Oh, yeah, it's an amazing thing.
They didn't have any choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hey, speaking of new records, you guys saw that Google was fined a record $2.7 billion. Is it dollars or euros? I'm not sure which. For promoting its own results in its shopping service in Europe.
Yeah. Right.
Which doesn't exist anymore, by the way.
Really? I did not know that. Google Shopping?
Yeah. No, it was actually promoting. They had a what was that site called?
Well, this article said it was Google Shopping, which I don't think they were selling stuff, but it was their own, like, buy from here and it's this price, buy from here and it's that price. But I never understood how Google made money doing that.
No, they actually had a store. I heard this. What's it, darn it?
You're not thinking of the other potential fine, are you? Because there's another complaint that's ongoing.
My question is this.
So the EU has fined Google. This says $2.7 billion with a dollar sign. So I'm going to guess $2.7 billion.
We'll go with that.
And really, when you get into that range, you're probably splitting hairs. You're only probably, what, $100 million either way if you go euros to dollars? That's a lot of money. Like, what if Google just says, no, we're not going to pay? Or is it just a cost of doing business and they write a $3 billion check?
Yeah. I don't know exactly if they would be able to collect on that or if they would file a complaint with, like, the ITC, the International Trade Commission. I'm not sure how they would, or maybe they would get to the point of, if the, you know, if Google's traffic is being routed to ISPs in Europe, then they would just, you know, tell the ISPs, hey, shut it down. You can't bring that content in here.
Yeah, but I mean,
it'll be hard.
That would be tough, and it would cause rioting in the street. I mean, I know that these stories usually work out with, they come up with some negotiation, whether it's for the full amount or not, and then they write a check. But I've always just been curious about how countries can fine companies that aren't based in the how do they do that? And what if the country just says, we're not going to pay that? Like, I mean, okay, so now you've had a Dunning notice against Google for $3 billion. Does Google care? I definitely do not understand the intricacies of international business law, but I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, and my, of course, take on this is, since Google doesn't pay hardly any taxes to the European Union, this is how they're getting their pound of flesh.
Ah.
You're not paying enough of a tribute to us. I think Apple pays more in taxes, and I think also Google has a lot more market share in Europe than it does in the U.S.
Well, that would make sense, but I mean, even that is, it seems like it's playing with things. I mean, how is Google getting out of paying the taxes? I mean, don't they say something like 90% of Apple's revenue is generated outside of the United States, and most of it's going through that, what do they call it, double Irish with a twist, whatever, and they keep all the money in Ireland?
Yes. I think most of Google's money, I think they've worked out something with Ireland as well, the government of Ireland, so it's a low to no tax domicile for them.
Right. Well, and Ireland is doing that with a lot of these tech companies, and the exchange is, Ireland's not getting huge amounts of tax revenue, but they're getting jobs. They're getting tech jobs that pay well and keep their people employed and make it attractive for people to go to Ireland.
In a similar vein, I saw that Qualcomm has filed patent infringement complaint against Apple with the ITC, which is kind of out of Apple's own playbook. They've filed complaints with the ITC before. Six inventions that Apple isn't paying for: battery life extension with intelligent antenna power management, helps a phone connect to the network at first boot. These are, you know, U.S. patent 863-3936,
right,
which allows for graphic intensive applications use less battery power, and then some monitoring and network traffic. So six patents, and Qualcomm is saying, hey, they have not paid the proper royalty here. So who knows how that will go? But you know, when you have as much cash as Apple and Google do, you got a target on your back.
How much is Qualcomm worth? At what point does Apple just buy that pesky little gnat?
Good question.
I'm trying. My keyboard's not working here. Qualcomm. I guess net worth wouldn't really be the right thing to search for, since it's like
look at their market cap.
Their revenue's $23 billion. So
the market cap is $82 billion.
That would wipe out what? 30% of Apple's cash?
Some of it, for sure.
And
that's assuming that it would get through regulatory.
Well, that's true, and that would really shake up the mobile market since Qualcomm makes so many CPUs.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like Apple could make the problem go away if they're truly infringing.
I'm sure their contention is that they're not. That, you know, they arrived at these technologies parallelly, which is not a real world.
Yeah, but it's all about who got the patent filed first, right? And if they're truly in infringement. Now, this is a story I had not heard anything about, but I even questioned, like, some of these patents sound awful nebulous. Like, and that's the thing that bothers me about software patents. It used to be that to have a patent, you had to have a physical contraption. But with software patents, it's just an idea. I have this idea, and it can kind of apply to this. And if you actually implement it in real life, then you owe me because I had a thought. And I don't agree with that.
Didn't Amazon go through the same thing with like one-click ordering? Someone sued them for that.
And I don't know exactly how that ended up. I know Amazon still has one-click, so I don't know if they bought out the patent or they just beat them into submission.
It's just, it's become ludicrous.
Yeah, I don't understand how that works. That's an interesting one. I definitely have to do some research on that story. That's not one I'd heard of, Todd. Interesting.
And then Jacob, I think you had one here on about Facebook.
Yeah, so there was big news a week or so ago that Facebook has hit 2 billion monthly users, and they announced that they were seeing 2 billion unique users using the platform each month. I guess Zuckerberg wrote in a post, as of this morning, the Facebook community is now officially 2 billion people. We're making progress connecting the world, and now let's bring the world closer together. It is an honor to be on this journey with you. They also put out some information on some interesting statistics, I guess, that they said each day more than 175 million people share a love reaction. I am proud to say I have never shared a love reaction. And on average, 800 million people like something on Facebook every single day, and that more than 1 billion people use groups every month. And that got me to thinking a little bit that most of my use of Facebook has sort of... I stalk friends and family. I'm not a really super active social media person anymore. But there are a few groups that I follow, you know, Christmas lighting groups and things like that. And Facebook groups have sort of supplanted like message boards and forums. And I got to think that Facebook has taken the wind out of a lot of the sails that were, you know, like forums and message boards. And I've seen a lot of message boards that used to have a ton of activity that have just turned into, you know, ghost towns in the last few years, and they've all moved to Facebook. So I think that's interesting. I gotta wonder how many more people Facebook can add before they run out of people who have an internet connection. Because 2 billion out of, what's the population of the planet? 7.5 billion? I gotta think you're starting to get up into the high double digits of percentage of people who are connected to the internet, period.
Oh yeah.
How many of the 2 billion are bots though?
That's a good question. I don't know. But still, I mean, that's a huge number.
Definitely.
And you know, I mean, for so many people, Facebook is the internet. I mean, that's
yeah.
I'm curious to see what's next. What turns Facebook into MySpace? Because you know it's out there, or it's at this point, are they so big that they're the dominant force for the next decade? I don't know.
They're so big. I find it hard to believe that anyone's going to supplant them, but anything's possible.
Well, I mean, you would have said the same thing about MySpace in like 2006, right?
No.
I don't think so, because everybody's on Facebook. I mean, when your parents and your grandparents and your kids and...
Yeah, that's true.
Your priest. Like, everybody is on Facebook. I got a friend request from the priest. I was like, yeah, I don't think so.
The other thing, if you want to go down the rabbit hole, is the U.S. government and other governments now have a vested interest in keeping Facebook and Google in business because they do so much
data mining.
Data mining, data collection, connecting people. Okay, if that person's in that group and that person's in that group, then that guy is probably involved in some nefarious activity.
Yeah, so now you've got people, you've got me wanting to put my tinfoil hat on and get off of Facebook.
Too late.
Not that I get fixated on things, but on that Google story, the thing that they got sued for was their service that used to be called Froogle, F-R-O-O-G-L-E.
Okay.
And they got rid of Froogle in 2007. So it's a long time ago that they got, and originally the Froogle was a different business model. They were taking a cut of the sales, as opposed to the current Google Shopping just charges them like a click-through ad rate, and people pay ad space to be on that service. So I don't know.
I mean, gotcha.
I still think...
My understanding of the EU's complaint, though, is that Google Shopping service was elevating the results of people that have bought ads with them over people who didn't. And that's what they're being fined for.
But isn't that kind of the whole point of buying an ad? That you'll have a higher placement than someone who's not buying an ad?
That's what I think. But the antitrust rules are different over there, and they don't have to actually show harm. It's just, could this theoretically be less competitive? And yes, in theory, it could be.
So not that it is less competitive. It just could, in some, you know, thought experiment, be less competitive.
The EU has a panel of experts determining whether it was anti-competitive or not.
They have top men on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you gotta love that. I know every now and then a story pops up about like libel and slander, and the rules are so different in Europe, and people get caught up all the time for saying things on Twitter, and you're like, really, over here, that's just, we call that Tuesday, and they get fined and whatnot. And yeah, that is interesting.
Hey, we were going to ask Jeff when the next time he was on about Microsoft's Xbox One X.
Yeah.
Comes out in November.
So do you know much about it? I saw the stories all pop up a few weeks ago, and then they've just kind of quieted down. Now, admittedly, I don't follow a lot of gamer news, but I haven't seen a lot since then.
I know it comes out on November 7th. That the current Xbox One games and accessories will continue to work on the Xbox One X. But basically, the Xbox One X is going to be 4K and run native games in 4K. And it's going to be a huge performance boost for 4K gaming. It basically has... again, this is like, you know, numbers that don't mean much to me, but the current Xbox One S has about 1.4 teraflops of GPU power.
Okay.
The Xbox One X is going to have 6 teraflops of graphical power. So it's basically umphy. The current PS4 Pro is 4.2, which is why people are saying, oh, you know, right now the current PS4 Pro is better for 4K gaming because
it's three times faster.
It can push the pixels, but the new Xbox One is going to be, you know, equivalent to high-end PC gaming cards like a GTX 180.
Okay.
So, you know, it's going to be pretty amazing. And in the first game is Forza Motorsport 7, which is a big deal for some people. My kids love the Forza Motorsport games, and it's going to be running 4K at 60 frames a second.
Oh.
That's impressive.
So yeah, that's you know, going to be big. They're going to take some of the older games, Halo Wars 2, Minecraft, Gears of War 4, Forza Horizon 3, and those are going to be upgraded for free to support 4K. So if you already own the games,
okay, hold on. Okay. Minecraft in 4K? Do we really need that?
No. I know it sounds stupid, but it does make a difference.
Okay.
What difference does it... That leaves me scratching my head. Although, I will say, I was just Googling some Forza 7 screenshots that are supposed to be on the new console. And they... I mean, it just looks like a picture. Like, it looks real. Like, it's unbelievable.
It looks, like, really crazy awesome. So, you know, I think the big things to know is that, you know, the old Xbox games old Xbox One games will work on it, which is all also, you know, that's a good thing.
Yes, yes.
There's, you know, going to be some pretty amazing 4K games available. And there's a lot of talk that it has enough processing power that we'll probably see some VR gaming at some point in the future with that box.
Hmm. Nice.
They're not really talking about that right now, you know, in the current release, but they're saying that it is powerful enough, you know, to run. So yeah, it's, you know, it's faster, bigger, better, stronger, which is, you know, the name of the game.
Now, does Microsoft have like an AR or a VR play on the Xbox platform? I know Sony has the Vue goggles, right?
Yeah, no, they do not currently have that. They're really pushing AR at Microsoft, and I still think it's a little farther away. But you know, I'm ready for AR Minecraft because I think that'd be really cool to be able to build your Minecraft worlds in your room. That would be kind of cool.
Oh yeah, and actually, as an interesting segue, have you seen any of the AR kit demos that have been floating around for iOS 11?
I have not.
So there have been, obviously Apple is pushing augmented reality big, and their system is called ARKit that's coming out with iOS 11. I'll have to find and link to some of the videos, but what you just said exists today. The Minecraft team has released at least prototype port of Minecraft on ARKit, and there's a video that's floating around where this guy is standing out front in his garden, and I don't know how big it is, but it's I mean, it's definitely like a, almost looks like a English garden where it's, you know, I don't know, maybe 40 feet wide by 40 feet with a little wrought iron fence and a patch of grass in the middle, and the phone is able to recognize the ground, and then he's building a Minecraft castle right in his little front garden and can walk around it, and he can walk up to it and chip holes into the brick and go inside of it and look around and back up and like walk out to the street and then turn around and point his phone at the front yard, and there's a freaking Minecraft castle, and it knows where it is in relation to everything else, and it exists, and it is amazing. There are a handful of demos. There's one that I saw where a guy has a tape measure laid out on, a table, dining room table. And this is a great use of augmented reality. So I guess in the app, you tap and just drag your finger and you draw out a virtual tape measure. And it lines right up inch for inch all the way out. And so some of the examples that they show in that are like measuring a piece of art or a picture on the wall so you can see how big it is, or measuring a piece of furniture to find out if it would fit into your house. And the phone is aware of its environment, and you just drag the dimensions and it tells you exactly how big that thing is in the environment. You don't need to know anything else about it. So there are some really amazing demos out there. And interestingly, I saw an article that was talking about Google's Project Tango, and the fact that Google's been pushing Tango. I think it was last year at Google I/O that they were really talking about Tango as their augmented reality platform. And this article was talking about the fact that there are right now really only two devices that Tango is on, which is the Lenovo Fab 2 Pro. And a not-yet-released Asus ZenFone AR. So that's it. If you want to run Tango stuff, you only can run it on those two devices. And I guess the Lenovo Fab 2 Pro is a huge phablet device that your average user, the article seemed to indicate, probably wouldn't want to carry. With ARKit, it just runs on, I think, a 6S or newer. And some of the demos are just, like I said, unbelievable. And they're talking about the fact that when iOS rolls out, they're going to have an install base of just literally millions and millions of people who are going to have a new thing to play with. And some of these demos are just unbelievable. So I'm curious if Google is scrambling and feeling the pressure or, you know, what their answer is going to be. Because, I mean, we're talking, what, 2 months, I think, until iOS 11 comes out. And some of these demos, which are, you know, on beta level software, are pretty polished. I mean, they're nice. And, you know, we're 2-3 months away from this dropping and potentially being a huge game changer. So does Google have an answer to this? Or are they asleep at the switch with, you know, having these hardware requirements and they just don't have a lot of devices out there that can run it? Are they going to slim Tango down and get it out there on Pixels and get it out there on Galaxies and just get it out there?
That's the thing. If Samsung does not make a Tango-compliant phone, it doesn't exist.
Pretty much.
They sell so many more phones than anybody else in the Android world. So, yeah, they can Google can get it on a Pixel. But what is that, 1 million, maybe 2 million units? It's nothing. Nobody's going to know about it.
Right. And, I mean, like, who? I didn't even know Asus made phones. I mean, you've got LG. They probably are 10 million units. I mean, are they maybe that big? I mean, you're right. It's Samsung. It's Samsung or it's some budget, you know, cheap, inexpensive phone.
Well, if you look overseas, we've talked about it, right? Xiaomi and Oppo makes a bunch. Vivo. So in theory, they could get it on one of those phones. But again, you know, Lenovo. Come on, Lenovo. They've said they're not even going to use that brand name anymore for mobile. They're going to Motorola. And none of the Motorola phones, none of the 36 Motorola phones that are being released this year has Tango, apparently. So,
right.
They're way behind. If this is imminent on Apple, Google's way behind.
I mean, you'll probably see applications within days of iOS 11 coming out that are probably fairly fully fleshed out. I'm going to say by Christmas this year, you're going to see. I mean, augmented reality is going to be a big thing. Whether or not the other, you know, Google and Samsung get on the ball with it or not, I think remains to be seen. And I don't know what Samsung might be cooking up on their own, but they can't even get Bixby out.
No kidding.
There was an interesting story and I guess a case of some Me Too-ism. You know, so Apple unveiled their HomePod at WWDC back in June. So Samsung is now rumored to be building their own intelligent speaker. They are going to have Bixby as their digital assistant. And apparently they are going to be creating their own Echo HomePod competitor. But the problem is they can't get Bixby to work reliably in English, apparently, on anything. Is another smart speaker what we need? Is Samsung going? I mean, does Samsung have enough of a brand name in general that people will buy it? Or is it already too Amazon Echoed, too Google Homed, too Apple HomePodded out for, you know? Oh, and there was Harman Kardon we talked about on the last episode is coming out with Cortana powered Invoke. Is it a space ripe for multiple competitors or is it too little too late?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Samsung has the brand name for sure, but yeah, again, I also don't know that many people that are buying these types of devices.
Now among coworkers, I know a guy who's all in on the Amazon Echo ecosystem, and he has a couple of Echoes, and I think he might even have a Dot or two. I've got an Echo, but I don't know too many people that have these devices. I'm intrigued by the HomePod, but the pricing has kind of got me a little because, you know, for what it is. I don't know. I just, for me, it's not a super exciting segment of the market. And then the rumors are that the Samsung is delayed until, I mean, it's still a rumored device. It's definitely not an absolute, but one of the big hiccups is that they can't get Bixby to work reliably with English. Apparently it works well with Korean and Japanese, but not with English. And not knowing anything about Korean or Japanese, I feel like if you can make those work, English should be a walk in the park. But I don't know.
It's their second language, and they don't have nearly as much data as Google does. So they're starting behind from that standpoint.
Well, I think it's the same problem that Siri has, which is, I mean, the voice recognition's pretty good, but Siri herself is not nearly as useful as Google, and part of it is because they don't have the mountains of data that Google has. I mean, Google, hands down, is a better intelligent assistant, if you will.
Maybe iOS 11 will change that.
Well, I mean, that was the big theme they kept repeating is machine learning. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of where they go with that. I think we've been going for probably close to an hour. Are there other stories that you guys want to touch on? Anything else that is new news?
Oh, I got something for average Android.
Oh, sure. We haven't really talked that much about Android, so lay it on us.
That's right. I've got the phone Mr. Whipple would hate.
As in, don't squeeze the Charmin, Mr.
Whipple? As in, don't squeeze the Charmin. I've got a link in here in the show notes if anybody wants to check out the commercials from the 70s if you're too young. But it's the HTC U11, and it has Edge Sense, which we'll get into a little bit later. The specs on this flagship are 4 gigs of RAM, the new 10-nanometer Snapdragon 835 SoC, because, you know, it's not a processor anymore. It's an SoC. I can't remember what that stands for even, but system it's supposed to be more than a processor.
Well, it's everything. It's your system on a chip.
Thank you. Yes, system on a chip. 64 gigs of storage and a micro SD card up to 128 gigs. 5.5-inch quad HD screen with Gorilla Glass 5, IP67, water resistance, 3,000 milliamp battery, and quick charge 3.0. The rear-facing camera is a single lens, which breaks some of the trend towards dual cameras. The 12 megapixel with a larger 1.4 unit of measure that I don't understand pixel size. F over 1.7 with OIS, EIS, and HDR. And then it's got a front-facing selfie of 16 megapixel. Some reviewers are giving it higher marks than the Google Pixel and the Galaxy S8. It did get a higher DxO mark score, but the recent scores that are coming out from that look pretty suspect.
Really? Interesting. So maybe they were working on a...
Basically, pre-release? The DxO mark, the problem is it's rating like an LG G6 the same as a year-old Motorola budget phone camera. And it's like, how could those two be the same? In actual use, they're taking way different quality of shots.
Huh, okay.
The compromise on this phone, though, is there is no 3.5-millimeter headphone jack, so going the same way with Apple. It does come with noise-canceling earbuds, but sadly, they only work on HTC phones. And it comes in 4 colors, ice white, brilliant black, sapphire blue, solar red. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 5 colors. My notes are wrong.
Yeah, and the colors are weird. It looks like a bad chrome job.
See how pretty?
Oh, did you get one?
Oh, I have one. I was listening to this other podcast, and I entered a contest, and I got second place.
Nice.
So I didn't get the phone, but I got a $50 off coupon. So they don't give those away to everybody. Unless you actually go to HTC and ask for one. So Edge Sense, it is kind of a gimmick, but it's a useful one.
Okay.
And the reason that it's useful is you just squeeze the phone on the sides and boom, I'm in the camera app. You can't really see that, but it's that quick. So you can grab this thing out of your pocket, squeeze it, and by the time you get it up to your eye, it's the camera's there. So and you can set it for anything you want. You can launch any app, but the camera is, I think, the most useful one. It's $649 unlocked with free shipping in the U.S. And Android Central also had a video on the top 5 things the U11 does better than the Galaxy S8. Faster software, and it's very smooth, very responsive. Better audio for the built-in speakers. A better fingerprint scanner, which isn't saying much with the S8's problems. And the nice part here, the manufacturer AI crap is easier to ignore. So, yeah, it's got its own HTC assistant, but you can just turn it off and ignore it, which is what I did. And then, of course, the Edge Sense.
Now, I got to say that the sample pictures that I'm looking at online, the outside in the daylight ones look really good. They've got a low light shot, and it's a little noisy, but okay. I mean, that's always the toughest situation. The camera looks really nice.
I'm not going to be able to show it, but I took a low light picture last night, and it's definitely the best low light picture I've taken on a camera.
Really? I mean,
on a phone's camera.
There's
yeah,
definitely something to those what do they call them, micron bucket lenses that they use to gather more light, and having yeah, those bigger means that you've in theory got less amplification going on, and so you've got less gain and less grain and all of those things, less noise and low light pictures. I don't know that looking at the backs that the shiny faux chrome really grabs me, but I've got to say, I of all of the Android devices I ever had, yes, I see your lovely,
so pretty, so shiny.
What do they call it? It's almost like a pomegranate.
Solar red. And if as you kind of turn it in the sunlight, it kind of turns changes gold color from a certain angle.
My HTC One was probably one of my favorite phones. And I mean, I know that was back when they still either were working with, or did HTC own Beats, or do they just have a partnership with Beats? Because my One had the Beats audio built in, but I mean, it sounded great. It had the dual front speakers on it. And I mean, it was actually a pretty loud, like it was great to, you know, if you were washing dishes or something like that, you could easily hear it without having to put headphones in. You know, and I love that HTC just doesn't die, because they've been circling the bankruptcy drain for how many years now, and yet they still keep pumping out phones.
I don't know if they're making money on the Vive or what, but the 10 was a nice phone, but it didn't sell that well. I don't know if the 11 is going to sell any better or not, but I think it's definitely a step up from the 10. So now we'll see. I've only had a couple of days, and don't even get me started on FedEx. I've got a whole other rant about them.
Now, with that, what do they call it? What's the squeezy thing called?
Edge Sense.
With Edge Sense, like, does it, like, if you just grab it out of your pocket, does it trigger it, or is it smart, or does it know when you want it to sense the edge and when it doesn't?
You can set the sensitivity.
Okay.
So it has, I don't know, theoretically like 7 levels, but you can set it so that every time you grab it, you'll get it. I kind of went in the middle, and so far I'd say it's about maybe a 5%. You know, I grab that out of my pocket 20 times, and maybe one time I select the camera. So it hasn't been a big deal so far.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes along. I did go ahead and put a case on it. I'm not thrilled with this tempered glass screen protector. I may get a different one. I went with one that covered all the bezels. And usually I get just the cutout one. I may order a cutout one, see if I like it better. So,
See, I'm not a fan of screen protectors. I rock naked, and I live on the edge, die by the edge, because I have a nice little scratch in my in that top oil resistant coating now, and outside in the sunlight, just so I see a nice long fine little scratch on my screen. But you know, that's the price you pay.
Jeff, do you put cases on yours? I don't remember. I mean, I know you put cases on, but what about screen protectors?
I have a glass one. I use it. I like having the glass on there. I don't know that it really does much for me, but I like to think it does.
I dropped the phone enough. I think I certainly like having it on there.
Yeah, I haven't tried any of the new ones, so they may be better, but I tried one generations ago, and I didn't like the feeling it gave to the screen. My favorite was I don't even remember who made them, but I know Apple carried them. I don't know if it was an exclusive or not, but it was a stick-on screen protector. It was the only one I was ever able to get on without getting bubbles and lint and fuzz, but it gave it a matte finish, but it didn't really distort the screen, so you didn't really get fingerprint. It was nice. I haven't seen those in years. I mean, I'm talking like since the 3GS.
Yeah, a long time ago, but yeah.
And that one was one of my favorites. With the Retina displays, they might not work so well now, because it obviously diffused the screen a little bit to mattify it. They weren't crystal clear, but that was one of the only ones that I liked.
Right.
I'm going to withhold judgment on the battery for a few months, because it's great now out of the box, but let's see what happens in a few months.
Yeah, after you've actually put some cycles on it and all that fun stuff.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it's very cool. You'll have to give us some updates as you play with it and use it. Now, is this your daily driver now?
It's now my daily driver. I switched over I bought it unlocked, and the switchover process was pretty smooth this time. The only thing I had trouble with my music program, but once I just turned off the phone and turned it back on, it worked okay. And what else? Oh, I just had to put in the APN for AT&T to get on their data network.
But
pretty good. Pretty good, or pretty smooth transition for me.
Very cool. Well, yeah, definitely looking forward to future reviews on hands-on. That's awesome.
All right. Well, should we talk about what we love?
I think we should. Todd, what do you love?
So I just went ahead and listed the Mobile Tech Roundup podcast, which I kind of alluded to earlier. And as I say, if you only listen to one tech podcast, listen to the No Better Than Average show. But if you only listen to two, well, add in Android Centrals. Having said that, if you have room for three in your schedule, Mobile Tech Roundup does a great job of covering all the shiny mobile gadgets you might covet. They have enough people that, like this last contest they did for their 400th episode, both LG and HTC donated a phone. So, you know, they've been in the two guys doing it. One works for Google, and I forget what the other one does, but lots of experience with mobile gadgets and very knowledgeable.
I will have to add that to my rotation, because now I'm being forced to keep noise in my ear at all times. I've been mostly going with the Joe Rogan podcast just because it's so damn long. But I'll have to add this one to my podcast catcher. Very cool. So I found a new app. What I love, if you are an iOS person, this is the app for you. It is not available for Android. Sorry, all the Android listeners. But it is called iSmoothRun. And it is basically a data collection tool for running, for walking, for cycling. And it works with the Apple Watch. It tracks all of your vital stats. One of the things that I really like about it is that it automatically captures all of the data from an activity, and then it will sync it with just about any other app or platform that you want to send it to for further analysis and tracking, and how am I doing, am I progressing. So it's got integrations with Strava, Runkeeper, SmashRun, Fitbit, Daily Mile, Dropbox, Nike Plus, a whole bunch of other ones. And when you complete an activity, you can turn on different integrations within the app, and it'll just automatically send your data off to these websites for crunching and analysis, including being able to upload TCX or FIT files directly to Dropbox, so that you can keep them and have all of your data in one file for later analysis and processing if you want. It lets you do ghost runs. So if you follow a track regularly, you can basically compete against yourself to see if you're, you know, progressing, if you've got, if you're doing better, doing worse, all that fun stuff. And then the feature that I really like, and one of the reasons that I got it, is it has a metronome built in that will work on top of audio. So if you're trying to hit a certain cadence in like a walk or a jog, you can turn the metronome on and it'll give you, you know, it's a metronome. I mean, it clicks, but it's nice because it has an auto mode. So you can say, I want to walk or run, say, 170 steps per minute, and it'll only kick the metronome on if your pace drops below that. So as long as you're keeping your pace up, you don't hear the metronome ticking. But if you fall off your pace, it'll bring the metronome in, and then it'll get you hopefully back in gear, so that you're back at, you know, trying to hit your target pace, or rather cadence. It's $4.99, so it's not free. It's iOS only. Super full featured. It's really nice. It works with the Apple Watch, although I don't believe the Apple Watch app is fully standalone, so you still have to bring the phone with you while you're using it. But if you're at all tracking any sort of activities, it does them all, and it does it really well. If you're on iOS, I would highly recommend taking a look at it. That's what I love. Jeff, how about you? What do you love?
So I'm going to take the freebie easy one, and that is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's so good. I am not a fair judge, to be all honest, because, you know, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. So it could have been utter crap. I really feel like it was. I really feel like this is the best Spider-Man ever on the screen. I mean, it just hits all the good notes. A lot of comedy. He acts like a teenager, which he's supposed to be,
right?
And I just I loved it so much. The villain was excellent. Michael Keaton is just amazing. I can't say enough about it. Go see it right now. Just, I know it's late, but somewhere it's got to be, and just go right now and see it.
The review I saw on it from Kurt Loder was pretty positive.
It was amazing. I just, it was so good.
Is this Sony Pictures or is this Marvel Studios?
So here's the deal. It's Marvel Studios directed it and is putting it out, but it's being distributed by Sony Pictures. So Sony basically said, Marvel, go ahead. And Marvel said, yeah, we'll do that. But Sony's distributing it.
Okay.
Yeah, because Iron Man's in this, right? Or Tony Stark.
It has Captain America in it. So it is the part of the Marvel universe.
Well, and I know Sony had some weird deal where they had the rights to Spider-Man and nothing else, and that all of the previous Spider-Men's were Sony properties.
That is correct. And then this is still, quote unquote, a Sony produced film.
With Marvel Studios.
But with Marvel Studios. So basically, Sony's getting a cut, and they didn't really have to do anything.
That's a good position to be in.
Yeah.
I'll definitely have to give it a look, because I think it was you who had posted on social media how good Wonder Woman was, and we went and saw Wonder Woman, and it was fantastic. Like, I mean,
too, but Spider-Man, two
solid thumbs up.
Just so good. I'm telling you, love it. Love it.
Better than Wonder Woman, though, because Wonder Woman now has a high bar. It's probably my favorite comic book movie.
For me, better, yes, but that's just because I love Spider-Man so much.
Okay.
You know, very similar in that. What I like is it didn't have to go into an origin story. Here's a Spider-Man movie, beginning to end. You know, they didn't have to tell how he got his powers and all that stuff. And it was
just, we know the story by now.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you don't know how Spider-Man got his powers, then, dig out of your hole. We didn't have to hear with great power comes great responsibility 2,057 times. It was good. It was very, very good.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that's going to conclude our show for this evening, this week, this two-week period. Thanks, everybody, for listening to episode number 129 of the No Better Than Average show. You can call in and let us know. I don't know what topics do we need help on. Just let us know if you've cleaned your gutters recently. And that's at 317-643-1212. I know I need to go out and get mine, and now I'm a little paranoid about it. I may have to go to Lowe's and get some wasp spray first. You can check us out on Facebook. We do post some things out there occasionally, facebook.com/nobettershow. You can send us an email, feedback@nobettershow.com. And now that you've listened, we hope you know better than average too. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
Bye. Have a great week.